Hey everyone, it's Paul Blake from the World Bank Group's Development Podcast here. I hope you and your loved ones are safe and healthy during these difficult times. I just wanted to share a quick note ahead of this episode because it contains details about the World Bank's Fast Track financing facility to respond to the coronavirus pandemic. Now, since we've recorded it, the bank has increased the value of that package. Earlier, it was valued at up to $12 billion. Now it is valued at up to $14 billion. Because we recorded it earlier, you may hear a few references throughout this episode to the earlier $12 billion figure. So I just wanted to clarify that ahead of this episode so as to not create any confusion. Now, without further ado, here's the Development Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Development Podcast. I'm Paul Blake alongside Raka Banerjee.
Today we're doing a deep dive on coronavirus, or COVID-19 as it's officially known.
The outbreak has captivated the world's attention, drawing concern across the globe.
And earlier this month, the World Bank Group announced a support package for countries responding to the crisis, including financing of up to $12 billion.
Over the next few minutes, we'll get the view from Africa when we speak to the Deputy Director of the Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, a man who has spent the past few weeks traversing the continent as it braces for the outbreak.
Then we'll bring it back to Washington and learn more about the global response, including how the $12 billion could be spent.
It's all coming up here on the Development Podcast from the World Bank Group. But first, to kick things off, Raka, as always, take us through the data. So Raka, just to be clear, everyone is talking about coronavirus, but if I'm understanding correctly, this is just one type of coronavirus, and the World Health Organization is calling it, or at least the conditions that it causes, COVID-19. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, that's right. So the disease that's caused by the virus is known as COVID-19, which is short for Coronavirus Disease 2019, but the virus itself is named SARS-CoV-2. So coronaviruses are a family of viruses that affect people and other animals and occasionally spread from animals to people.
Okay, so I think I've got that. Help me understand what's happening in terms of the international community's response.
So just in September of last year, actually, the Global Preparedness Monitoring Board, which is co-convened by the World Health Organization and the World Bank, it put out a report called A World at Risk. And one of the chapters in the report is called Preparing for the Worst. And the worst is actually defined as, quote, a rapidly spreading lethal respiratory pathogen pandemic. So that's not necessarily what we're facing right now. Back in 2008, the World Bank estimated that if something akin to the 1918 Spanish flu, which was a lethal respiratory pathogen pandemic, if we had something like that today, it would cost the world $3 trillion.
Well, that's pretty scary. I mean, that's a huge number. But if there's all this research and warnings, wouldn't that mean that, you know, we're well prepared as a global community for something like this?
Well, there's definitely some good news on that front. So because of all of this work that's been being done, there's definitely been more funding set aside for research into epidemics as of the past decade, even. There's a global influenza surveillance and response system, which is currently, it's grown to 151 labs in 115 countries. There's also increased funding for pandemic preparedness, including regional initiatives like the Africa Center for Disease Control and Prevention.
Who we'll be talking to the deputy director of here in
exactly,
a few minutes.
Exactly.
So if there's good news, I'm guessing then that there's also some bad news as well.
Yes. Unfortunately, the bad news is, you know, according to this report, The World at Risk, we just aren't there yet in terms of preparedness. The world needs way more investment into research and development for new vaccines. We need protocols for sharing data and medical countermeasures across countries. We need to be able to surge manufacturing capacity quickly. We need more work into pandemic planning and coordination across multiple sectors, right? It affects financial, transportation, security, global communications, you name it.
And what would it take to reach that level of preparedness that we need for a global pandemic? Does that report say anything about that?
So the World Bank put out a report last year that estimated that countries would only need to invest $1.69 per person, US dollars, per year to reach an acceptable level of epidemic preparedness. So as tragic as the current outbreak is, many are probably hoping that what we're going through now with COVID-19 will serve as a strong motivation for countries to prepare for other pathogens that could be coming down the line that could be far more lethal.
Right. And earlier this month, the bank has committed $12 billion, or up to that, in immediate financial support to countries dealing with the current outbreak, much of which, my understanding is, will be used to support preparedness.
That's right. And that's including grants and low interest loans for low income countries. So that will ideally help them strengthen their health services, train frontline health workers, and make sure that the poorest patients have access to treatment.
Well, as the virus has spread around the globe, one region that is of particular concern is Africa, where health systems are fragile and already stretched by recent outbreaks in years past. To hear more about the African country's coordinated response and to get the view from on the ground, Raka spoke to Dr. Ahmed Agwell, the deputy director of the Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, who joined us down the line from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Agwell. So you've been traveling across the African continent in the recent days. Can you just tell us a little bit, what's the mood like?
The mood, I would say, is one of uncertainty because this thing is new. What images available online and in the media is not very encouraging. And of course, there's quite some anxiety what that will mean if it came into onto the continent. So there's a bit of anxiety and concern across Africa.
Would you say that the region is prepared for if there is a wider outbreak of the virus?
I would say that we are certainly much better prepared today than we were when this outbreak started. And preparedness has so many different aspects. Knowing that the health system in Africa, in the various countries, is relatively weak. Mm-hmm. Widespread outbreak would not be something we want to think about, but we are certainly planning for, because the healthcare system will get overwhelmed quite quickly. And we are trying to ensure that we don't get there by enhanced surveillance, early detection, rapid diagnosis in the lab, and also rapid containment, isolating individuals early to avoid community transmission.
So you're the deputy director for the Africa Center for Disease Control and Prevention, and you've been working in this area for a number of years. How serious does this outbreak feel, you know, relative to previous outbreaks?
This one is looking a lot more serious than the earlier ones. If you look at COVID-19, its transmissibility is quite high. It's easy to transmit from person to person. And then the level of illness that it causes, particularly to the older folk, is quite much higher than what SARS and MERS has shown us to be able to do. So these two things combined makes COVID-19 much more serious than we have seen similar pathogens. The added factor is social media.
What role is that playing?
Social media is a double-edged sword in the sense that incorrect information is rushing across the different platforms at a really high speed. And this is causing avoidable panic, the social media part and the misinformation that comes with it has made it a lot more complex.
I'm wondering, what are some of the other unique vulnerabilities that Africa is facing in terms of the outbreak relative to other regions? Are there other issues that you see?
For some areas, for most countries, in fact, you find that Access to healthcare facilities is not as easy. They are farther away. And so someone may sit with their symptoms for quite a while, trying home remedies and being looked after by relatives and things like that. And this may expose the community a lot more because the person will be amongst them much longer due to the health-seeking behavior in Africa.
But would you say that in general, African countries are better prepared today than, you know, say 10 years ago, 15 years ago?
Absolutely. The level of preparation now is much better. And I would start with the fact that there is an Africa CDC now, which was really established as a result of member states of the African region seeing that there was a gap, that most of the support for these outbreaks were coming from agencies outside of the region and the continent. So they established Africa CDC. So that is a big plus. Yeah. So the presence of Africa CDC has helped to professionalize the response in a more coordinated manner. The other thing is, since the Ebola outbreak in West Africa in 2014, countries have been trying to either establish or strengthen their outbreak management capacities. And with presence, in fact, availability of more information and better tools, countries have been able to build that capacity, and therefore it makes it a little bit easier for them to organize themselves around protection, preparedness, early detection, much more than would have been the case 10 or so years back.
Well, thank you so much. That gives me hope too. Dr. Ahmed Agwell joining us from Addis Ababa, thank you so much for taking the time from your busy schedule to speak with us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, and thanks for having me. Anytime.
So COVID-19 obviously isn't just causing concern in Africa. It's a truly global issue, and it's one that will require global coordination and solutions. To that end, the World Bank earlier this month announced a financing and technical support package to help countries in responding to the outbreak. To get more details, Paul had a chance to speak with Dr. Mohamed Pate, the World Bank Group's Global Director for Health, Nutrition, and Population.
Mohamed, let's jump right into it. The bank announced this package valued at up to $12 billion. How can that money be spent effectively?
So this outbreak, as it's unfolding, it's moved from where it was primarily in China to countries that are less strong in terms of their health systems, are more vulnerable to an outbreak such as COVID-19. And the bank's support is really geared to help those countries be able to better detect the virus when it hits their shores, do the case finding, diagnose it, but also equip the frontline health workers both with knowledge, but also with the tools to be able to respond adequately. That will be key to containing this outbreak before it also then gets established within their populations.
Spreads further within the populations. Geographically speaking, where are you most concerned? Where is the greatest need for support and help, both now but also as this outbreak develops and changes over the coming weeks and months?
There are parts of the world. The virus is all over the world, and yet there are some geographies where it's not really
established yet.
Yeah. Because they haven't been able to diagnose it, or the virus may not have reached them yet. So those are the areas where we need to support them to prepare before the virus hits them, or if the virus is there, for them to detect
so
where
it
is.
So they can be kind of best defended against it.
Exactly. Yeah. And then be able to target interventions so that they can be able to respond adequately.
And on that, the kind of map of it right now, obviously China has been hit hard by it, but it's also in a bunch of high-income countries. If and when it spreads to low and middle income countries, what are the sort of unique vulnerabilities of these countries compared to maybe what we've seen so far?
So this virus, what it's showing us is that even high income countries are not really as prepared as they should be, as we've seen in some of the countries in Europe, but other places as well. But the poorest countries are likely to be more vulnerable to it, in terms of their preparedness, but also the capability of their health systems to deal with the consequences of it. Because not every country is able to stand up a response like China did,
right,
in terms of even its healthcare system.
And if I'm not mistaken, you were a health minister in Nigeria before, is that correct?
Yes.
What are those countries doing now? What do they need to be doing now to prepare before this virus arrives on their doorstep?
So in Africa in particular, after the 2014 outbreak, several things have happened. In the case of Nigeria, we invested quite a bit in terms of the public health system, but also the management structure. So we developed an emergency operations center, which helped when Ebola came to being. But several institutions have come to be in the Africa Centers for Disease Control, and many national public health institutions have been developed, and the World Bank is supporting them. And that is going to make an important difference when African countries are responding to this.
Let's talk a little bit about that support. Let's get into the details. So I think something that gets maybe a little bit lost beneath the headlines, a lot of people see the money, they see the figure, it's a big number. But the World Bank is also providing technical assistance and technical support. What exactly is meant by that? And I know you're a doctor as well. What will that mean to the doctors and the healthcare workers who are on the front line of this crisis?
So the financing that the bank provides will enable countries to stand up their response plans itself, but train their health workers. That requires ability to adapt whatever WHO has within their country context, but train the health workers to be able to get out there to protect themselves, but also take care of those patients.
One of the other things I was reading about is working to help maintain trust within communities. I understand that has to do with like making sure healthcare workers are safe, making sure communities understand what's going on. Can you explain that a little bit? What exactly? Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes. I think the role of trust is even more important in crisis situation like this. As we've seen in DRC or in West African Ebola outbreak or even in China, where the trust environment is low, people then may not follow the best guidance, the most rational thing for them to do. So engaging communities and citizens to understand what is at stake and to follow the instructions that have been given to them.
And to know that these instructions are in their best interest, I guess.
Yes, and to do that transparently, because sometimes lack of information fuels the distrust, because then people start guessing what is really going on. But if there's full transparency, then people will believe what they're hearing and be able to use that and in the actions that they take.
So rumors aren't flying and
exactly.
That sort of thing. Can you tell me also what the bank is doing to help the poorest patients? So those that are either super remote or maybe are afraid they're not going to be able to afford care during this outbreak.
Mm-hmm. What we hope to see in the days ahead is countries come up and utilize these resources to respond not only for the overall population, but taking cognizance of those who can easily be left behind,
right,
the displaced populations.
So you talked a little bit earlier about the need to build resilience. Beyond the $12 billion package that was announced this week, what has the bank been doing to help countries prepare for this and other big outbreaks over the past few years?
So the World Bank's effort to do this did not start with COVID-19.
Right.
It goes, several years before now. If you go back from SARS to the pandemic flu, to the MERS period, but also the Ebola, there is a track record of experience in the World Bank in terms of dealing with this. Preparedness is a core part of it, and what we are trying to do is to ensure that the cycles of panic and neglect get broken with the COVID-19 response.
Panic and neglect meaning panicking about this outbreak and then kind of neglecting afterwards?
Which is the pattern that has occurred in the past, where when the media shifts its attention, then everyone goes back to their normalcy.
The experts, the funding kind of
what
goes
away.
What we
hope is that investing in core public health becomes central to the work of development and the work that the bank does, because the implication is not only in health, but also has a huge implication on economies and societies.
Dr. Mohamed Pate, thank you so much for your time. We'll have to leave it there.
A big big thanks to our guest today, Dr. Ahmed Ogwell of the Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and Dr. Mohamed Pate, the World Bank Group's Global Director for Health, Nutrition, and Population.
And a huge thanks to everyone who is out there listening. We've really been gratified by the number of people who are listening and subscribing. And as always, we'd love if you'd share our podcast with your friends and family and leave us a review, hopefully a positive one, on Apple Podcasts or whatever platform you get your podcasts on.
And of course, if you have any feedback, please email us at thedevelopmentpodcast@worldbank.org.
Thanks for listening. Until next time, goodbye.
Goodbye, and wash your hands.
Wash your hands. Please wash your hands.